This week's episode has been brought to you by the paid subscribership of Caitlin, Brandon, Carl, Jeffrey, and Kimberly. Thanks, guys. Welcome to the Dad Podcast, episode 69, my brother, for anybody who also listens to Never Not Funny. I am here with my new friend, Kevin Miller. We are, well, it's fair to say, 2 hours into podcasting. We did a Gamerland podcast episode. Now we're going to do a Dad Podcast.
It's more like four, if I may.
Yeah, I know, right? We spent a lot of time talking. And probably should be recording most of it. That's hard.
You said 69. I thought you've had far more episodes than that.
We did. But then I had a co-host who quit.
Oh, I see. So you started over with.
I figured that if it said episode 114, which I think is what it was when
Bill quit. You had 114 episodes?
Before he quit, yeah.
Wow.
And then it kept going from there. I think 114 would have been the first one without him.
Got it.
And then people are like, well, where's 113 through 1?
Yeah, kind of thing. Yeah.
So I created an episode. I did the episode, started, and then I went back and dropped a new episode like 3 months in. I dropped an episode early on and said, this is the story. Welcome to the Dad Podcast, kind of thing. That's how it works. So now episode, I think it's just intro. It's not even episode one.
I'm sorry. Your regular listeners are probably like, why are you telling me this?
No, here's what people do, I think, with podcasts like this, is they stumble upon them. They don't know. Oh. And I don't think everybody, like usually what people do is I've found through their emails, they listen to a show that's recent.
Yeah.
And if they like it, they go back and listen to everything from the beginning.
I see.
It's a weird thing. It's like reading a romance novel. It's like reading 38 Shades of Grey before going back to the first shade.
That's what I did with Harry Potter. I listened to the fourth book and then went back and listened to 1 through 3.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We were
on a road trip, you and me and Danielle and Ricky and Jeremy, right? Yeah.
But that wasn't your choice, though. That was because they were listening.
No, Jeremy and Danielle, I think, or someone else, were way into Harry Potter. The fourth book had just come out, and so we were driving back from Tahoe, and Jeremy wanted to listen to it on the car ride. But, of course, he was so deep into the book, why he thought listening to it was a good idea only proved his addiction to Potter. And so he started from the beginning for those of us in the car, and by the, you know, we probably only listened to it for an hour in the 4 hour car ride back, maybe an hour and a half. I was hooked, and he, having owned the book, did not need the audiobooks, gave them to me, and I should have stopped. I always knew it since that moment. Once I knew I loved it, I should have stopped in the middle of book four and gone back at book one and started.
Did you finish book four and then
went back? And so I knew all these things that I shouldn't have known the whole way through the rest of the books.
So that made it worse, you think?
It put it out of order.
I don't understand spoilers, is what I guess I'm saying.
It's not so much spoilers is that my heart begins with the information of book four, making books 1 through 3 like prequels almost. Mm-hmm. Because they're all like backstory. Like I knew that, I just didn't know how it went down. Right. And so then when book five finally came out, now finally things are on the edge. Anything can happen. The future is now.
Right.
Whereas before, if I listened to book two, well, I know Ron's not going to die.
Because he's in the fourth book. Isn't there, I don't know.
Or in the third book, I know Sirius Black is okay because he's in the fourth book.
So many spoilers.
For stuff that's 15 years old.
But I always wonder that thing where, because people always go, oh, you ruined it. Because I've already, But it's like when you go back, I think that there's joy in being able to know that. Oh, he doesn't know that Sirius is okay. Like, you know.
Yeah, no,
I mean?
I didn't complain. I just said that, like, it's like knowing the end of a score for a game before watching it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's some, even if the game is TiVo'd and sitting there, you can just glance at your computer and see what the final score is. You don't, because it robs you of that anticipation of how are we going to move forward. That's what it's kind
but
of
I
like.
But I feel like it's not a fair comparison to say that it's like a game, because the purpose of the game is to reach that final score and have your score be higher. The purpose of a story is just to entertain, and there's so many layers to the artichoke that is a story, which I think is a much better analogy than an onion. And
yes, because you throw away 90% of an artichoke.
No, because every layer of an artichoke is different.
Oh, very well done.
You know what I mean?
Very
but well every layer to an onion is not different.
You still throw away most of the artichoke.
You throw away part of. You don't throw away.
You when you,
you eat, don't eat the petals.
You don't. You eat the petals.
I think I've been having sex wrong. Yeah, you eat the petals.
You slide them across your teeth.
That's
and throw them.
Eating. You don't eat the rind of a watermelon. You don't eat.
But that's my point. When you're done with an artichoke,
you don't eat the husk of an onion.
You have a well. That's just like some paper on the outside. But when you eat an artichoke, there's a pile of garbage. You have to have two bowls. It's like worse than ribs. You actually make a bigger mound of stuff when you're done with artichokes.
But the point of the analogy is to say that the deeper you get into an onion, it changes.
That's
when
true.
In actuality, it does not change.
There's just more onion.
There's just more onion, and they're identical. That's rings of a tree stuck in a globe is what an onion is. Yeah. An artichoke, there's a different fucking food in the middle. There's a
rings of a tree stuck in a globe.
That's what it is. That's all an onion is. But an artichoke is different to the point where I know how to eat all of the outside of an artichoke. But when I get to the heart, I need the help of my lady to figure out how to enjoy it.
Yeah, but what?
I still don't know.
You pull off the starfish looking thing with the puckers.
Yeah.
And then you cut that up into quads and eat it.
All right.
Don't you do that?
Well, this segment has been Cuddlingus with Kevin and Justin.
Well, and that's still one layer deep to Harry Potter. My point was that I did enjoy it, but now in my mind, book four is where everything starts.
Yes.
Like, Harry does not begin.
That's your A New Hope.
Yeah. He's not a 10-year-old boy. When I first met Harry Potter, he was a 14-year-old boy, a 13-year-old boy. And so that just sort of tweaks with my perspective on the entire franchise.
This conversation has already reminded me of our good friend Joseph Bears, and I feel like I need to say congratulations because the listeners know him. He's had his second daughter.
Aww.
I don't know name because I'm not good with Facebook, and I haven't been stalking him, and I haven't been bothering him.
You don't know his name or his wife's name?
Either. I don't know. Maybe it changed. No, I don't know their baby daughter's name.
Got it.
So I hope
I thought it fascinating that your fans like to hear from, you know, old friends that you have and your neighbors.
Yeah.
Like, it's not necessarily – you have an expert in sex and you have an expert in marriage and family.
I have a pediatrician and a family and sex.
You have experts in these fields, and then also
they
just
like
some
to hear
dude
from them
you met.
Too. Well, here's what I think. I think that why people like this show is because this is a new era of entertainment where this show is a reflection of their actual lives. It's when I started looking for podcasts that were dad-oriented to see what was out there as far as competition, and what I quickly realized was that there was not a show that represented my life. The people that find this show and enjoy it represent. I find it hard to believe that there are the like what we like to call the puppy, rainbow, and kitten parents who like to talk about how it's just everything is such a blessing and it's just such a joy. Mm. They don't listen to this show. They think I'm a fucking crazy person.
Yeah, or rude, or jagged, and
or damaged.
Damaged.
The people that listen to the show know all those things, but are not weirded out by them. That's what I think it is. I think that they're like, and that they have smaller dosages of my moments where I feel like I'm losing my mind.
And Joey Bears would think that our conversation up until this moment, it was geeky and irrelevant?
No, he would just laugh at it. He would laugh at every time there was a ref. I think he would laugh at every time there was a reference made that he doesn't understand. It adds to it that he knows you. That's
well, I was going to say, he was listening consistently to our original show,
right?
When our entire format was just our personalities,
our talking, because he liked knowing about what was going on in our lives. When we changed it to video games, he's like, I don't play video games.
But half of everything we had to talk about was some cultural reference that he didn't know anything about.
Right.
Anyway,
right? That was because it's humorous.
Nerds.
That's exactly. That's why I don't have it on the dad podcast. Otherwise, I would pull it up.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, stay frosty, everyone. We have lots to talk about.
I'm excited to be here.
Kevin, we were doing
another show, and the whole time I was like, I wish we were doing that other show.
All right, good.
This is going to be great.
I want to talk about, because it's coming up on the holiday season. We're going to talk. Kevin is going to be your resident video game expert for your kids. So we'll talk about stuff like that.
Really?
What if you get to be an expert on the show?
I can be. Yeah. I'll be your toy shopping expert.
Let's do it.
Hell to the yeah.
Can I also
tell Bible stories?
Yeah. I guess. I think we have religious listeners.
Yeah.
I think
I have lots to talk about Santa Claus versus Jesus.
Like the movie?
No, like...
Oh, that would be such a good movie.
Yeah. That was South Park. That's where South Park came from.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That is right. Yeah, that's
so they made that little animated short of Santa versus Jesus with actual cardstock characters in stop motion, and it blew up on the internet before there was an internet.
Yeah.
And then they got a deal from Cartoon Network.
You gotta blow up on the internet.
Before there was an internet.
Oh.
So you have to blow up on the thing before it's a thing.
All right. So I'm gonna go back in time, assassinate Al Gore. That'll give us 5 years for the internet to be invented.
My head hurts.
And if I could punch Steve Jobs in the groin.
Why don't you just use that time machine to do other cooler things?
Don't tell me what the fuck to do with my time machine.
Sir, yes, sir.
How are things going with your child? You have your son still.
Yeah.
He is now one.
Yes.
This is my favorite part that I know, and I'm going to blow the end of your story.
Yeah.
I hope not, but that your son is now sleeping 12 hours a night.
Yeah. Which is just an answer to prayers.
How long has that been happening?
Maybe a month.
All right.
Maybe a month now.
Now, we have listeners that are listening to this in the year 2083 that have new children that are younger than your son. Why do you think he went from sleeping every 5 years to 5 years?
I do not know what abacus you use on the show, but I would like one before you have me on.
But why do you think he went from sleeping every 5 hours for 5 hours at night?
Oh, I don't think I know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's because we kicked him out of our room.
What?
Yeah, we said, sleep in the hallway, jackanape.
Gave him a little, like, dog bed that smelled like wood chips.
It's very sweet. It's very sweet. No, he'd been sleeping for far too long in his bassinet, pack and play, in our room next to our giant bed and our giant room built in the 1940s when rooms are huge. And the bed was too hard, and we were disturbing him. He was disturbing us, so we were all disturbing each other. And finally the longing to have our roommate with us was overshadowed by the longing to have a night's sleep.
So this is not a chicken or egg situation. Do you think this was ignorance? Like, you weren't aware that you were disturbing him. You knew that he was disturbing you.
We knew, we were fully aware of the situation.
This
it was
is
just
blowing my mind.
We didn't want him to not be near us. That was really it. We just liked him being there. We liked to look over and see him there. We liked to have him. We felt like a little family and everything. And it was tough.
So on some level, though, you knew that if you put him in his room, in his crib, he would sleep through the night?
I knew he would sleep better.
Okay, yeah.
I think if
you tell a person who is sleep exhausted,
yeah,
listen, you can sleep all night long,
yeah,
undisturbed, or you could randomly wake up to noise and know that he's right there.
We were past the point of sleep exhaustion.
Yeah.
So like at, you know, those 3 months with the newborn where they're just awake as much as they're awake in the middle of the day and asleep as much in the middle of the day. We were not doing that anymore, but we were not getting solid sleep. Like, and to the point where now for the past month, I've been tempted to keep a dream journal because my vivid, memorable dreams have returned to my life, and I'm waking up rested. And I was like, oh, that's why life has sucked for a year, because I haven't been getting a full night's sleep and didn't know it.
Yeah.
I didn't know that I was being kept at a beta wave level brain operation until he was out of the room. And now we're all of us are happier. So he conks out, conk, and he's gone for 12 hours, and we can conk out. And now it's now to the point where if he does wake up super early or like 7, we can go in there, throw a toy in the crib and leave him, and we can get about 30 more minutes out of that. And he kind of knows, because he's still waking up, and he kind of knows, okay, I'll just play with this thing. And then he lets us know, okay, I really do one out. Please let me out. So that's been remarkable.
I love everything about this, especially the fact that there are people now that maybe have a 1 year old that is not sleeping in 12 hours that want to reach through their iPod and punch you in the throat.
But I would understand, and feel free to hate on me all day long, because no two children are built the same.
Right.
And I think any, because we did everything. We tried the book that claimed you do this.
Yeah, you said you were sleep training at one point, but that never involved getting him to cry through at all.
Like, we couldn't, we did everything.
It was as simple as you just put him in his crib in his own room and then poof, he was sleeping.
That's what he needed. That's what he wanted. It was a more comfortable bed. Which I think was a huge deal for him, and my wife Kat is very good about building in a routine that made sense for him, that for him it was like the blanket and the pacifier that seemed to be the magic trick, and so now he associates sleep time with those things, and he is not a snuggler. He doesn't cuddle up outside of most of the time. Mm-hmm. When I see other 1 year olds or 2 year olds getting all cozy, it always blows my mind. Like, oh, babies do that, because he never did it.
Yeah.
And so now, but he knows, he holds that, and he'll lean his head on your shoulder, like, okay. And so I guess my encouragement, which is so weird for me to even pretend like I'm an expert, but what I learned from this experience over the year is that books be damned, that people are people, and every single person is different. And yes, there are some really major themes that most of us can fall into, and if you do some things, it's probably going to work out, because we are all the basic model. But personality is where everything can get thrown out of whack. And my wife tried to get him to follow every rule that she read on how to do sleep training, and he bucked it. He would not do it. No matter what, there was just no convincing him that, you go to bed at this time and do this thing in this order, and it'll teach him what to do. He had his own agenda, always has.
How long did she try this?
Months.
Oh, months.
It was not like a flash in the pan, 1 week thing. She dedicated to, I'm going to do it in this order and for will him.
Yeah, it is a weird, that's what I think is the kind of the conundrum that we all are stuck in, is that I disagree with the books be damned thing. Like,
that's just what I learned. I'm not saying don't use them.
Right, of course.
You need them as a reference point.
Right. That's, yeah, and I think that's what I thought you were saying is that you, because we live at a weird time where I don't think there's as much parental training that's being passed on. We're more in a time where you kind of look at your parents and go, this is where you screwed up and I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, there is a giant generational gap.
Yeah, the baby aspect is really missing in that, where you want to know yourself, and books give us the opportunity to have that information, and now we have information that wasn't even accessible
by our
parents.
But the reality is, the people that are going to be able to help you the most are your parents, because you share a genetic code and similarities with them. And so, for like, if my mom was able to tell my wife how I behaved as a baby, I think it would have greatly helped her, because she'd have been able to say, he was like this and his brother was like this. At least that's narrowing the scope down to, there's just a billion different philosophies, and many of them claim, you do this, I guarantee it will work. And they can be dramatically different, from the cry it out method to the cuddling method. And you're like, both of them say they're going to work no matter what you do. I promise you it will work. And what we learned is that you have to figure out what works for the kid. You have to find the currency that works for them.
But I think it's also a weird thing where you can't necessarily let the kid dictate.
No,
like that's the hard part too, to figure out. And what we're talking about is
that's my point. It's just that there's an X factor there of the humanality of the personality that you cannot quantify from 300 pages of book. That's just not possible.
And I would argue that the X factor is less the child and more the parent. That's why I was curious as to how long. I'm not saying that either if she would have done it another month, it would have worked, or that, but there's no way to know. There's no way to know that if your efforts, because you cannot be objective about your own child.
Yeah, of course not.
You cannot.
Well, let's put our hands together and say it's the parent-child dynamic that is the X factor.
What's up, buzzwords?
That neither field can induce a regular response. And I'm out.
You were going really good, and then you just fell off.
I tried to find more buzzwords.
You shouldn't have said that.
I love buzzwords.
So you're happy you're getting sleep now. Things are much, like, if you look back at 3-month-old Quinn,
yeah,
and compared your quality of life
Oh yeah,
to today, far better today.
Far
yes,
better.
Yes?
Yeah, 100% better. You know, what's funny is that your advice to me was to get some skin to skin time when he was a newborn, like days old or day old. And so I took advantage of that, scooped him out of the bassinet, still in the hospital, took up my shirt, rested him against me, and I felt nothing for him. I felt alienated by him. There was something about it where I was like, I don't like this. He was a slug, so I had no way of knowing he didn't like it. But what I know about him now is that he, as a child, now at 1 year old, he would not be game for that kind of thing. Cuddling is just not his thing. And and so what I've discovered is
that— Are you a big cuddler?
I'm not a big physical affection thing, but I do like to— Yeah, I like to hold or snuggle. I would snuggle a baby if he would cuddle up with me, I would do it.
Right, but I'm just hearkening back to what you're saying about like if parents would are informed. Like, I never noticed this about you, but like I don't think you're without affection or not a fan of it. You're not reluctant to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's not a thing that you do. If that makes sense.
That's very true.
If you and your wife sit down on a couch at home, you're not arms around each other.
Sometimes, but it's not our go-to. We can be on either sides of the couch and still feel as close. But he thinks he's cuddling with you when he jams his feet into your stomach and tries to wacky wall up your chest.
Right. This is interesting to bring this up, because my next thing is that our history together, I know you to be the person who would bother some people by pushing your sock feet underneath their leg on the couch.
He does that.
Right.
There's a picture on Facebook of it. I thought of that, and the moment I saw him, he had a little play date with another boy about a month or two older than him, and was sitting on the couch, and he climbed up on the couch next to him and dropped his leg over the other kid in sort of a pseudo, I'm dominant yet very comfortable with you, plus I kind of like you sort of way. And I thought of that. I'm like, yeah, I would put my feet on people.
Chip off the old block.
Way to go. Way to go. Feet equal affection.
But yeah, I'm curious to, because I think a lot of that stuff, like, that's what I'm everything that you're saying, I'm not arguing it. I'm playing devil's advocate to it, because I think a lot of that ends up being informed where we're not aware. Like, I do agree that, yes, people are people, and I know from me, like even my two guys, that there's differences in their personality. I haven't completely bought into the fact, I'm willing to accept it, but I haven't jumped off the cliff into the idea that he's out of the box, just who he's going to be, and I have little to no impact.
I think it's 100% both.
You think it's a 50-50 road?
No, I think it's 100% both.
What?
I think the math adds up. That it is that dynamic. Because I think it's a fallacy to think that any one thing can be a condition on of itself. Like you were saying earlier, you cannot be subjective to your child's behavior. Neither can the child be cannot be the base for your experiment, right? So it's the relationship between the two and how they interact. The child has a personality that is undeniable. Humans have personalities.
Right.
And adults have personalities, and how those two things interact is what produces the results.
Jelly on its own is good. Peanut butter on its own, but when you put them together, it becomes peanut butter.
You have a whole other thing. Yeah,
right.
Salt, water, and ocean. They're very different things, and so that's what it's impossible to say, because if I took Quinn out of my home and dropped him off in an orphanage, or he ended up living with you, or ended up being shipped off to China and learning a totally different language, so on, infinite number of possibilities, what person would he be? Dramatically different, but at the core of it all, not even the core, but there would be striking similarities, because he's dealing with half the recipe is the same, this sort of strong, independent, I don't cuddle personality, and that would come out in different ways depending on how he was raised and how he was interacted with.
Right, like part of my recent experiences with my real mom, my parents split up when I was about 5, is that I've learned that I grew up in a separate family. It stands to reason that because they divorced, that they are different people, and that they each had different opinions on what the family should be. And because my dad got custody of me predominantly, I was more influenced by his idea of family than I was my mom and how interaction happens and stuff like that. And so after a while, and I'm throwing this out there
No, I think you nailed it on the head.
I'm throwing it out there because I think it might be because I know we have a lot of new stepdads that are that listen and stuff that have asked for me to get more stepdads on or single dads too. But I think it's more for like step parents is that, you know, you kind of have to be aware of the fact that this is going to be the new family dynamic for the kid. And that while Mick, who's our a mutual friend of ours, is on the show talking about how you have to be there and be ready, but you can't force your way in. You have to kind of wait it out and settle it into it, like making a butt imprint on a couch.
or like diving into water. You can't do it from 10,000 feet. You'll hit it like concrete.
And it'll just kill you.
Yep.
But at the same time, I think it's smart for you guys to be aware of what that can do to the kid as far as their opinions of their original parent or biological, whatever you want to call it. For me, as a young kid, I didn't understand those feelings, and it took me getting older to kind of realize, oh, it's just because I'm a different person, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's why I don't agree with my mom on most things and why when she does things, it's weird. It's not because I hate her.
As a child, now and a grown adult, on the other side of being in a blended family or a divorced family, have you experienced a moment where you see, now that you've reconnected with your mother and that side of your family, you see similarities in yourself, in her or in them, that you're like, oh, that explains this aspect of my personality?
No, I mean, the only thing I have is I look at my father where I know that I'm a lot like alike in personality.
That's true. Yeah.
And the only thing I can think of that is an influence for my mom is the anxiety that I have about things. My father has no anxiety.
I guess it's tough because you're a male that was raised by his father. So there's going to be some natural.
Right. You're a guy who was raised by his mother.
Yeah, and my stepfather. But then when I, not reunited as an adult, but like in my teen years when I started to get to know that side of my family, I looked around and went, oh, here are the artists, because my mother's side of the family, not especially artistic.
Not creative.
My mom had a desire to do creative or do commercial art, but not in this, like, I am an artist sort of, like, no drive to do theater, and yet everyone on my father's side, a musician, all
of them. This isn't a creepy thing to say, but it's almost like your uncle I would liken more to being a father. Even though I know he didn't raise you or wasn't around when you were a kid, but I feel like you would be more in connection with him.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities there. And that's the tough stuff. I love my dad, the man who raised me. I call him a dad, even though he's a stepdad. I only make that clarity point for the point of this conversation. And he did a wonderful job raising me, and I grew up to be a well-adjusted guy. But there definitely is.
I'm on it! Taking my abacus with me.
Could you hear any of that with these amazing new mics? Okay, good.
It just sounds like you're in the other room.
Oh, good.
I'm an inch away.
My uncle, my blood uncle, and I have more personality similarities than the man that raised me from the age of 5 on, and that's because of these personality similarities. Uh-huh. That's great that you recognize. I felt a kinship to him the first time I met him too.
When I met him, I think I met him before I met your dad, actually.
I think that's true.
And then because we had moved down here, and then like within a month, your dad came to visit. Yeah. Your real dad.
Bio dad.
Which is my favorite upcoming Pauly Shore movie.
The sequel to Biodome and Caveman Dad. It's the merger piece.
But anyway, I go, oh, this is interesting, that because I didn't think you'd had much of a relationship with him, and yet you seem to have so many things in common.
Yeah.
That's what I thought was interesting about
His passion for technology, his creativeness, his artisticness. Well, I think all the men on that side of my family, including my brother, now as an adult, I can see these things of my brother and I both sharing the same sort of dark side and how we work that out in our own way.
Yeah, there isn't anybody in your family, maybe your younger brother that I know, who could look at and go, yeah, I could see them wearing a Federation outfit at a party.
And only because he joined the Army. So, so military uniform.
Well, and it's more so for me, in reality, is because I remember going to your house and you having a pool table that was covered because it was not meant for playing pool, but it was for holding figurines that he had painted for kind of Dungeons & Dragons X game.
Yeah, a tabletop war game.
Yeah, and so then I would be like, that to me makes sense. But if I looked at your Uncle Dennis, I could go, yeah, that guy, if you asked him about Deep Space Nine, he'd be like, Yeah, I'll tell you.
He owned uniforms.
Yeah, exactly. That's what uniforms. I mean. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And so are both, like, our passion. I think we both suffered from tempers and have had to learn how to master those. He joined the military, which half of my...
You're talking about your brother.
My brother, yeah. Half of my biological father's family is all in the military.
Yeah, that's right.
So all these things make a lot of sense when you see in the global picture. But say I had grown up in a family where I did not know my bio dad at all and never did, and they were all this mystery, I know that there would be a lot of aspects of my personality that just wouldn't make sense, and I would feel lost with or isolated in my own family because I wouldn't know why do I feel this way and none of the rest of you. It's because I'm missing half of my genetic code. I have no one to look to to be like, oh, that's why I'm this way.
No example.
Yeah, exactly.
Here, that makes me think of something that I recently dealt with my kids, not directly, so I'm sorry if I'm making an abrupt topic shift.
Not at all.
But the
I forgive you.
Jack has recently...
Which one's that?
That's my younger one.
Okay.
Jack has recently taken to, for whatever reason, some kind of violent, masochistic relationship with a couple of ladies in his preschool.
How much time do you spend on the show discussing the differences between your two boys?
Not a lot.
Because my wife and I spend a lot of time discussing it. We find it to be the most interesting social experiment. And I think every night I come home like that gorilla lady that's like, okay, bright eyes.
Posse?
Yeah, behaved in
or
this
Jane
manner.
Gale,
yeah.
Both of them.
Both of those, yeah. And Michael Crichton. Gorillas in the mist. I just find it so because that's the whole thing of what I mean by personality. Here are two boys from the same set of parents with just a couple of years difference, and they have a lot of similarities between them, and they have just as many differences in how they interact with how they're learning to interact with the world, with each other, with you, with things around them, what they do with their spare time. I every time I come over, Jacob is in front of the TV and Jack is laying on the floor in the kitchen talking to you.
Yeah.
And when Jacob was Jack's age, there was no getting him away from a television that was turned on.
Right. Yeah, he likes movies.
Yeah.
I could take him at just under two, and he would sit through a feature film at a movie theater.
Yeah. Yeah. Can
and
you
not,
do that with
Jack? Not be really disruptive. He's had moments where he would have to be held and moved around by different people, but I did it once with Jack, and he made it 45 minutes into Man of Steel. The entire time, me telling him, "Shh, you have to remember you." But he kept wanting to talk to me, even in a whisper. And then he started getting upset and being too loud, to where it was disruptive, I would imagine, to other people. Obviously, nobody said anything.
So
but
you took him to the lobby and drowned him in the water fountain.
Yeah, I did what every father would do. No, I didn't do that. I left him with the popcorn lady so I could enjoy Man of Steel.
Fair enough. But he has a sadomasochist relationship with
two girls at school. So it started
peers or adults?
No, peers. Well, that's a whole other thing. Is the adults? He's learned to talk about the difference. Jacob is the verbal negotiator.
Yeah,
Jacob,
this I love.
Jacob talks you through.
You really don't talk about this on the show?
Not a ton.
You should talk about this every time.
I think it's mentioned. But Jacob wants to talk to you about why what he wants is good for you and good for him. And
the negotiator.
Everything is talking. Yeah, he negotiates through verbal communication solely.
Yeah.
Jack has, and I'm curious to see, as he obviously talks a lot to the point where there are, that's the nature part of their being my offspring, I think, is that parents come in, because he's in the youngest class at his preschool, and parents come in and go, and he says hi to them and talks to them and tells them about what he's doing. And they go, how old is he? They go, because he's one of the youngest. He's second youngest in his class. And the people are like, he talks so much and he's only two. My child doesn't say anything. And I keep telling, the director tells me this and like, it thinks it's funny, you know, and I go, you need to tell these people how much their father talks. Like, it's not fair. It's not a fair comparison. Like, you saw me as a prime example. You saw me explaining why, what happens when my son throws a mild fit about having to come in after only being able to play in the backyard for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You saw what was easily a 10-minute interaction.
Oh, yeah.
Where I'm explaining him the long-term goals of his life of keeping his parents happy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I used the word dividends.
Yeah, it was great.
To my 5-year-old.
I smiled. I wish I had gotten out the camera.
The whole time he's tuned out.
In fact, he even said, but I didn't get to play enough.
Yeah. It goes back to square one. But anyway, So Jack is he uses charm, no verbal, yeah. not selling you. It's gummy worms, and he gives you a smile. And then if you go, no, he goes, please. And he tilts his head a little and gives you a little batting of his eyelashes.
He got Natalie's genes.
No, maybe. I don't know.
Because she can sell popsicle sticks to a guy that makes popsicle sticks.
And for her, it's not about what she's saying. Yeah. It's just that she just gets it. It's fun.
It's that,
and that's
don't
interesting.
Don't you want this? It's fun.
Because that's how it works out with my stepbrother and my stepsister, is that my stepbrother looks like my mom. Or wait, no, I got it backwards. Looks like his dad, but acts like his more like his mom. And I guess, no, I don't think that's fair to say that my sister looks like my mom and acts like her dad. I think I got it backwards. Maybe this is a bad, but anyway, here's the thing.
That's great.
The reality of it is that Jack looks like me, but acts like Natalie, if going by your analogy, and Jacob looks exactly like Natalie, but I think is more like me personality-wise. As a child, especially. But so anyway, back to Jack at the preschool. He bit a girl that was a girl that he likes. So he has two girls that he likes at his school.
Well done.
And when I say likes, I mean he hugs them and he kisses them. And when they don't want the hug or the kiss, he takes it by force and gets upset. Like grabs them by the arm and like if there was a word for toddler rape, it would be this. It would be that you're going to get it whether you like it or not. It's a weird, like, primordial, like, situation. And so, anyway, so everybody, and it's interesting to me that everybody thinks it's cute.
Yeah.
I don't really buy into the cuteness of it because, but again, I'm also the guy who uses the word dividends to his 5-year-old.
Yeah.
I look at it and go, would you be doing this if you were 30? Then you shouldn't be doing this at 2. But that's what's wrong with me. And so one thing leads to another. There's this new girl there, and he bites her on the chin and leaves like a little mark. And I felt horrible.
Yeah.
Because this, because I had had an interaction with this father where I had said, hey, I go, you're so-and-so's dad, and then let's call her Sally. So you're Sally's dad. And he goes, oh, yeah. I said, evidently, my son is quite smitten with your daughter. And I guess because I have a son, I think this is funny to talk about. And he goes, oh, really? And I go, oh, yeah. And I said, I just want you to know that my wife and I have raised him as a gentleman. And that I apologize in advance if he tries to do anything inappropriate with your daughter. Thinking that it is so completely far off the scale of reality.
Yeah, of course.
And he looks
at me. Because you're a well-adjusted, normal human being.
Well, this guy, I don't think so. I think a well-adjusted, normal human being starts an interaction like that. I appreciate you saying it, but
you're a well-adjusted, normal human being who is a professional comedian.
Maybe, yes. And also,
which is probably in the 1% of comedians.
Nothing well-adjusted about me. you're saying this also as my lifelong friend.
I was your best man.
Yeah, you also, so there's a level that you see as normal that does not exist outside our fishbowl that we're in right now.
But, you mean not everybody does a podcast?
Not everybody does a podcast with each other where they just tell each other about how normal
in a giant fishbowl.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, great touch,
right? So I tell him about you know it's fine and blah blah blah, and he gets kind of uncomfortable. So then he says something like, he goes, well, actually I'm really glad to hear that because she tells me at home that nobody likes her, which is a weird thing like for like a 2-and-a-half, 2-year-old girl to experience. I don't really think she feels it, but she was new to the school. And so anyway, so then she comes and then she gets bit. And then there's a weird thing where, like, you know, this is borderline assault. And in the world we live in, like, he could technically be asked not to go to the school, I guess. Like, I don't know. It's just a weird thing. And I just felt horrible. Like, I hated that feeling.
Yeah.
Well, then there was another little girl.
Wait, how did that resolve?
Nothing ever came of it.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what the school did. I said, do I need to apologize? And she's like, no, it's fine. You know, don't worry about it. These things happen. They're only 2.
Yeah.
Which is why I like the preschool. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that's how he feels.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Cease and desist.
There's another little girl that we'll call Sandy. And
Sally and Sandy.
Yeah. So she, he's taken a liking to her, and then to the point where when she cries when she is going to the class, I heard the mom say, well, Jack will be there. And so then she's like, oh, you know, like they use my son as a selling point. Aww. That he's going to be a playmate. And they're very cute together. This girl is the youngest in the class. I think she's like 2 or 3 months younger than Jack, and doesn't really talk or anything like that. And but he loves her. And so she bites him, but makes like a huge mark, like a huge red mark on his chin. And it was because he was trying to kiss her. And she didn't want to be kissed.
That's good girl.
She bit him.
She studied her rape guidebooks.
Right, exactly. She no means no. And she had taken, for them, all they need is like a real stuffed animal. That could be their guy in an oversized hat, you know, at a defense class. That was just a stuffed animal of some kind, you know. Maybe, I don't know, a Yo Gabba Gabba character of some kind. But anyway, she, and so I immediately say to the director, I say, please tell them that we don't care, because I don't want their parents to feel this guilt, and weird shame, you know, like, and it's so silly. It's a weird, weird thing that I wish.
And you paid it forward, which is nice.
Right. I wish it would have been Sally, whatever her name was, that had been.
Sandy.
No, this one is, I'm saying the first girl.
With
I
Sally.
Wish it had been her that bit him back.
Yeah.
But it was a different girl. But I just felt like, why do we care? Why, you know, and it's such a weird thing as a parent. I know, I hope most of you haven't gone through it, but I'm sure a lot of you have, where it's like, you just go, oh, geez. And it's like, you feel like people are holding up a magnifying glass to what you're doing at home.
Yeah.
With all this sensitivity about bullying and all that bullshit. And it's like, ah, oh, fuck.
I mean, but there's also like, because we put Quinn in Sunday school for an hour and a half. And almost every time, and this is a church I work at, and almost every time he's come back the past few weeks, he's had some new mark on him, like a scratch on his head. And notable, like he did not have that bruise under his eye before we gave him to you. So what is
some
happening?
Some kind of toddler fight club.
What are we doing? So I know that there, so I imagine you have to hold that intention as well of like, well, you want to make sure that he's in a safe environment, but not too safe.
Right. Well, and then there, well, the next part of the story is that, so then she bit him, and then he came back and I think hit her. This is another day.
Yeah.
He hit her, and he hit her with, like, a shovel or something and, like, caused, like, a little, like, next to her eye, like
a
pretty big, like, scratch or cut almost.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is going on? Like, this is not okay.
Okay, so, yeah.
And then the parents, I found out, were kind of irritated to where they kind of said something to the director of the preschool. And that's – it's just a weird thing. It's a weird thing that – I wish everybody was kind of like more of the mindset of like, eh, or, and maybe that's what they were saying. I don't know. I don't think that they're, from the vibe I get from at least the mom would probably be like, ah, kids are being kids.
Yeah.
But more so that I really wish that the teachers were more in the face of these little ones and keeping this stuff from happening. Because the reality of it is that the teachers are kind of working with multiple kids, and then, you know, for them to be expected to stare at the two-year-olds and be completely intent on them for 8 or 10 hours a day is a little high expectation.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And there's so many of them. And they get
a little break when they take a nap, but I'm sure that equates to some kind of lunch break or coffee break or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, mistakes are going to happen, and that's why I try not to be hypersensitive to it. But it was just a... it's just a weird thing to deal with, like the violence that's back and forth.
And
I think that this is what people mean, is that as they get older, this is what I think inspired this. When you were talking about as he got older, like it's obviously easier now than when he was 3 months old. I always looked at it, well, when they're in school 6 hours a day, how is that harder? And I think this is what parents were talking about. I think that you have to deal with this new social game. How they're interacting with other kids, and then how that affects relationships with other adults, because the adults are communicating on behalf of the kids.
Yeah.
And some of the adults are kind of, and there was, we did the costume parade, and there are some fucked up parents out there. There are some whacked out on Scooby
You're a
snacks.
Piece of garbage. It's a Halloween costume.
Close. Oh. There was a boy that was dressed as Katie the Snowplow, which these people acted like it was the Harry Potter of kids' books. And I was having a conversation with these people.
Isn't Harry Potter the Harry Potter of kids' books?
Exactly. And so it's like I was just having this conversation with them that every time I made a joke, It completely went over their head.
Who is Katie Snowplow?
Exactly. But they acted like everybody should know, and they made a homemade costume. For the, here's the thing. There are
seriously,
parents.
I'm pretty versed in this stuff.
Right. Well, look it up on your iPad. But there are parents out there that are overly involved, right, yeah. That we all see. The people that listen to this podcast, I think, are not these parents. Is that... But we know them. We see them because...
We know you. We know who you
we
are.
We do. They're so obvious. Is that this dude made a Katie the Snowplow costume for his kid. And his kid is two, maybe, or closer to three, probably. So the kid's not going, I want to be Katie the Snowplow for Halloween. Like, Jacob was like, I am Leonardo of the Ninja Turtles. That's what I want to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if I would have told him, you can't do that because we don't have the resources to do that, he would have either fought me on it or said, great, then I'm Superman. You know what I mean? Like,
but, right.
So these people, they did the artsy-fartsy.
A cardboard box and painted it green.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Well, that's what these people did. And that's the thing. Had it not been for the unbelievably awkward interaction I had with them post-seeing this, is that because I didn't know where I came down on it. So there's this dynamic where you see this parent who's an overachiever and they think they're doing all these great things, but there is an element of social acceptance that has to be learned by kids in a school environment.
Yeah.
You can't, this whole movement of you're special no matter who the fuck you are, just be you.
I thought the movement died.
Everybody has to like you.
Is that still a thing?
That's still a thing. Everybody has to like you because you're just you and all that stuff. I think is kind of a crock of shit. While I support individuality and I get that concept of it, but you can't just say, hey, I'm just going to be a dickhead and everybody's going to like me because I'm being me. It's my world.
Right,
everybody else is just living in it, all that bullshit, right? And so they made this costume, and this is the kid who has the only homemade cardboard costume with like Halloween webs used as snow, and nobody knows what the fuck it is.
and it's not a thing.
And my favorite part is all the parents are like, oh, look at the fire engine. And then the dad's like, it's just Katie the Snowplow. And then while and while the boy is walking around the parade, he's saying, hey, Katie, are you doing it? Like, he's calling his son Katie. And I know that's that whole, like, you know, we're not supposed to be, you know, leaning towards one gender or the other, which I think is weird. But so here's my point. My point is that at first I see this and I go, why does this taste funny to me when I look at it? And is that...
I cannot find Katie the Snowplow anywhere on the internet.
Good. I'm glad.
I literally cannot. I've tried every variation.
K-A-T-Y?
Yes.
Oh.
And K-I-T-E and K-C-A-D-Y. Nothing.
C-A-D-Y. Wow, I like
that. Tried it all.
So anyway, these people, like, I look at it and I go, what's going on? Like, is it my bullshit that I'm like, what are you guys fucking doing? Are you trying to make me look like a shithead? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
the mom who makes the homemade cupcakes. But then I realize that you're just weird. You're just social. I wish I could have recorded the conversation because I am somebody who talks for a living.
Yep.
And I could not have a conversation with these people. Now, I know that I'm not the perfect person, but at a certain point, that's on them.
And see, this is the conversation we are still having.
Yeah.
Is that it comes down to the personality. Like, and you started with you. Like, you would assume that the person you're talking to, is it within a marginal range of social norm to you?
Right.
Why? Because they're your peer. You're in the same organization with them. You're near them. Naturally, you would think that they are similar to you. But in reality, the only commonality you have is that you live in the same town and that your kid happens to go to the same school.
Right.
That is not a filter for socio-ecological and educational filters to make this person a crazy nut job or an aristocrat.
Fair point. The only thing I would say to that is that these were the only weirdos that I could see in this school.
Right. But that,
which leads me to believe that they are the minority as far as the
absolutely.
Way. Like, even I think I've said this on the show, but the guy who was Joe on Blue's Clues brings his kids to the preschool. Completely normal person.
Of course he is.
And he was just trying to stay out of the way of everybody who needed, like, they do a parade lap, like, around the little playground.
Yeah.
This playground is 20 feet by 15 feet, I'm guessing.
These things are so funny because in the kids' minds, everybody's looking at them. But in actuality, all the parents are doing is looking at their own child walking around with other kids. They could do the same thing at home without anybody having to leave work.
Well, these, or just do it with a webcam the way it should be. Less touching, I think. But anyway, What I love about it is that the parents do the same thing that these fuckheads do at a baggage carousel, where everybody lumps right on top of it,
yeah,
so that only the person who people who are in the front can get their bags, and it makes it, and then you got to bump into the people that are there anyway when you go through to get their bag. Whereas if everybody kept a 3-foot berth away from it, you could easily step through the people, step up, grab your bag, and walk away without anybody getting bumped or pushed or shoved or anything like that. So what these parents would do is that they would come out the door, and we would all be lined up.
This is all of them or just the crazies?
This is all the kids and all the parents. Got all the kids, except for me and Joe from Blue's Clues. I wish I knew his real name, and I'm sorry because I'm sure he's not a listener. But anyway, they would go.
Got to have him on the show.
All the parents follow. Yeah. Like shuffle, like a weird magnet following this parade to take pictures of their fucking 3-year-old in a bullshit Katie the Snowplow costume. Like, I don't understand. They're going to be fucking coming around. Like, does it mean I love my kid less or no. that I'm more grounded? I know what you're going to say, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think a better point, you have better perspective. Both on the event and life.
The reality is that maybe I'm not as good a father because there's points that I purposely do to make sure that my kid understands he is not the most important thing in the world.
I see. I think that makes you the best father on the playground.
Well, I hope so. Because there's a reason why I say that is my couch.
Yeah.
Not to point out possession, but to say that I like the idea that even though I know he doesn't really believe it and feel it, but there's an element of that couch is more important to me than you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I want you to...
But the reality is, he is not the most important thing in the world.
No.
And he's not.
He is the kind of the most important thing to me.
Right.
But not in the world.
And even then, the couch still has a place in your heart. So, because if he was the most important thing in your world, he could take crayons and a scissors to the couch and you'd be like, that's my boy.
Yeah. I'm going to go get you on that wall.
Exactly. But that's not it. Because it's a fallacy for a child or anyone to think that everything that they do is the most important thing in the world. World.
Yeah. Are you all right? You okay?
Shut.
Kevin's really tense. All right. Well, let's change the subject again.
Personalities.
Let's talk about this.
Don't you have cues you're supposed to play and then talk about things?
Well, we could do this as a...
You don't have to. I just thought you had...
No, I do. Well, you've never heard this one.
I thought the show was more produced.
This is a new one that I made. I'm trying to be. But to be honest, we planned to do this kind of last minute. In my defense... but here, we'll do this. We'll do this as a kind of a date night segment, but it has to do with kids. So it's time
for date night, where we talk about things other than being dads. Gonna do our best. No promises. Probably won't be that hard.
So for this date night, which is just...
I love how you talk into you and then you come out of you.
No, that was a different guy. That was an entirely different guy.
You got to pay that man for live appearances.
I would if more people did $2 a month. The
passive aggressive.
It's what I'm good at. Nature versus nurture. What I want to talk to you about, because what's interesting... A long time ago, I was talking about this with Bill, my former co-host on the show, when it was Skylanders, when it became a thing.
In the first 113.
And I was also talking to you about it on our now called Gamerland podcast, which is a video game podcast. Yeah. And what I thought was interesting is that he was looking at it from this perspective of a parent going, these guys are fucking after my money.
Yeah.
You were looking at it as a fan going, this is the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And what I realized that obviously I knew about you, but it just put those two hands together, is that you are a grown man, now a father, who also has the brain and love of a child, like the interest of a child. Like,
I think we all do. I'm just more in touch with it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean, is that I'm sorry if that sounded insulting.
Not at all. Okay, no.
So, because to the point where you have had other parents bring their kids to you, or you go to their children to play Skylanders with them. Mm-hmm. It's like a play date with another grown-up.
Yeah. Sometimes. And we want to have Jacob over pretty soon, too.
Yeah. Well, you came over during one of your days of your vacation to play Disney Infinity with him. And
the same thing, yeah.
So what I would like to, because we're getting into the holiday season, Black Friday is upon us. For any of the parents who maybe aren't as into the gaming world, like maybe we could spend some time talking about what's hip, what's new, what could you recommend, and all that stuff.
Yeah, so to Bill or anyone who is fighting the plight of Skylanders, I here is my suggestion on how to deal with it. And I learned a lot. First, stop listening to this right now.
Okay.
After I finish the sentence. And go watch The People versus George Lucas.
Hold on. You want them to watch an hour and a half documentary on something they have little to no interest in, and that's going to help simplify things for them?
Yeah. Yeah, it really will.
I think I may have had one of my first bad ideas.
All right. You don't have to listen to it right now, but definitely go watch it, because there's a chunk in that film. Not only is it an interesting conversation between George Lucas and his fans about all things Star Wars, but there and Indiana Jones, there is a great portion of there where they talk about merchandising and the fans' tension between the desire to own everything that is produced and their frustration that so much is produced at the same time. Now, as grown adults, which I am, and these people that watch Star Wars, it is not on you. It is not on the corporations to limit the number of things that they are willing to produce for people to sell. And any grown-up that's like, it is not okay that they are making so many different variations of the same character that I have to go buy them. Nobody is making you buy
anything.
That's not
anything. What they're saying.
No.
They're complaining because they know that that's what their kids want. And
no. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Grown-ups. I'm not talking about kids yet. I'm saying us grown-ups that do that. And that's a portion of this film that they're like, why, George Lucas, do you make 9 variations of Luke Skywalker? Mm. Why? I must own them all. Why would you do this to me? I'm losing so much money. No one's making you do these things. Grow a brain. But for kids, I get it. That it's like they're inundated with, I want. And I do think it's irresponsible, not of the corporations, but of parents to feed into that. And I have had some, being a single dude, or not single, but being without a 10-year-old by my side at the Skylander shelf, I've had some really great interactions. When the first game was out, it was all the rage to go to Toys R Us and all the stores with your son and stand there and meet other random men with their sons and discuss Skylanders. I made so many friends doing this. Now, since then, kind of that, I would see dads, you could see it in their eyes. They're like, we're going to hit 4 more stores and still we find
it. And they're just, so the idea is that they're not there going because their kid is going, I want this.
Yeah.
What you're saying is that Skylanders became a game they could play with their children.
Yeah, and the hunt. The hunt is on. I want the whole collection. I want all 32
but
characters.
But these dads... collectors?
Maybe. I didn't get to know much about them, but I knew that they wanted the characters just as much as the kids.
Yeah.
I mean, they were getting in the car. Several dudes I met did this. We had the Skylander loop. I talked to several guys about it. Like, you hit Fry's, you hit GameStop, you hit the 2 Toys R Us's in the game, and the 2 Targets. And they're all within this, like, 5-mile radius. And we're discussing, oh, yeah, they had this character, they had this character. And it's the grown men that are like, yeah, we're going to hit these places. And we could walk up and look at the wall and be like, they don't have what I need. Okay, bye. Back in the car. Gotta go. The new stuff is out there somewhere. So what is my point? That there is too much for any one child to want, right? Mm-hmm. And that there are these million Skylander characters. There's a million Ninja Turtle characters. There's a bajillion Legos. And my suggestion for any of these things, what I have learned as a grown-up, I wish I had known as a child, which is the value of wanting something and going after that. So now as a grown-up, I can say, I want Skylanders. So that's now my benchmark for stuff. If I am tempted to purchase other things, again, as Justin said, I have the mind of a child. Mm-hmm. So I do get the urge to buy the latest video game or the latest comic book or a movie or whatever, or go to dinner or go
out. I think a fair point of reference is how many total Skylanders are there now?
There will be 80 unique characters released once all of these, the current iterations are out.
How many duplications
and everything, it's in the hundreds.
How many do you own?
Out of those 80 unique characters, I own every one that is currently released.
I just want the listeners to have that as a point of reference.
Yeah, this is it. So what I would suggest is to find the thing that your kid wants, and within your budget, of course, to make that to make that the currency that you interact with your kids. Now, I get the kids' whims change very quickly and such. And so for something like Skylanders, just recognize that it does take a reasonable investment monetarily in order to actually play the game well. Like, it is built to where you have to put down a sizable amount of coin to get it. But the
how old do you think a kid can viably play the
Skylanders? I played the first two Skylander games with Jacob when he was four.
Yeah.
The newest game.
He's kind of an anomaly, I think, though, with video
games. Yeah, and I would say the newer game is a little tougher. I think they aged it up because the audience is getting older as well. Mm-hmm. I would say they've got to be able to play a 3D platformer game.
So if a kid who, say, is six or seven is saying, I want the new Skylander Swap Force because it's the only thing that's being televised, a parent might be able to suggest saying, well, let's start with the Skylanders. There's an early one.
Yeah.
So just like there are movies.
I wouldn't. I would start with the Swap Force. It's
really?
It's a better
game. It's too hard, though. I thought you were just saying first.
It is, but it's a better game.
I don't think you're looking at it. I'm not looking at it, is a fair way to say this. I'm not looking at it as something for me to enjoy.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it for something as much like a television, is that maybe I want to use it to occupy their time in the way of a movie, or maybe it's something that I can enjoy with my kid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if my kid can't really play it,
that's very fair.
You know what I mean? But a Skylander game, I think we could play together.
The thing about that's true. The first two Skylander games, because it doesn't have the jumping aspect of it, the three-dimensional aspect of it.
There isn't any timing. You know what I mean?
There's no
timing to button pushing that you really have
there's
to
a
master.
Little, and if you're playing it with your kid, you're able to help them along. If you have some video game chops or are comfortable enough with playing video games a little, you would be able to protect him or her in most of the levels if you have enough characters to do that.
Now, let's say you don't want to get into to the Skylanders or is Disney Infinity a viable option?
No, not if age is your
so it's
deterrent.
Even harder to play.
Disney Infinity is remarkably complex. The two game modes that are available to you are a creative like Lego digital world where you build your own levels, which is awesome if your kid is old enough to understand literally 3D spatial relationships. You have to build the ground and then put buildings on top of it and enemies and build this whole thing. Kids love it, but they got to be able to like master Minecraft and that kind of thing to be able to do it. So, and then the other version of it, there is no linear story to them. If you play the adventure packs and drop your character into Pirates of the Caribbean, say, you play as Jack Sparrow on an island running around solving missions that aren't linear. So it's not like a path or an obstacle course. It's in an open world. You could very easily walk away from and not know that you've left
the mission.
The mission.
So what's a viable age range for Disney Infinity?
That would probably be 8 safe, and I would say some 7-year-olds and maybe some 6-year-olds could nail it and have a good time. That being said, because of the open world nature of it, a kid could enjoy the game but would not progress forward throughout the environment of the story, because the idea is that you're dropped into this universe and then you expand it by doing these missions. It's like World of Warcraft, but with Lego, with Pirates of the Caribbean.
So say I have a couple years under or younger. I just don't feel like most people have like 4 and 5 year olds are looking to sit down and play game with them. And tell me if I'm being it, but I think it's six a fair enough age to where you could start playing video games with your kid
absolutely.
Without them being like cranky and frustrated. If so, what would be a good option for me?
I think between those two, I would still say Skylanders. I think your suggestion of picking up Giants is a good call. One of the things I've noticed a lot of Skylander Giants, the second game. One of the mistakes I think a lot of kids make is I've seen it from several kids, is they boot the game up and it gives you a choice to choose difficulty level. Mm-hmm. And the difficulty levels are associated with different characters. And so easy has this like little wimpy guy, and hard on the end of the other end of the spectrum has this big buff, cool looking guy. And I've seen a lot of kids go, oh, we're playing, I think I'm playing with the hard because he's a cooler looking character. And then it is hard. I play on hard and I get challenged. So I don't know how a kid that is learning video games or learning problem solving or being challenged by gameplay can play on hard for any length of time without getting frustrated.
Yeah.
So make sure you're sliding the ruler down to easy or medium, maybe. Within that universe, or you know, with not toy-based games. Sorry, my point is this: that if you're going to choose one of these things, if your kid is way into it, and you think that you can make that a currency, I think Skylanders can be a big negotiating tool for you if you can help develop that. Of like, reward systems can be Skylanders. Kids love the ability to gain new powers, and that's what Skylanders offers you. Is that every new toy is not only a toy they get to play with in the real world and collect. It comes with a sticker and a card, but the character has its own whole host of unique abilities. And they just eat this up. It's like a brand new superhero that they get to be all the time. And each character has the ability to choose a different power within it. Like, I get to do this thing or this thing, but not both. Disney Infinity does not allow that sort of complexity to it. So I do think that...
And we talked about it on the other podcast, but Disney Infinity was originally intended to be a game played in a different manner, mm-hmm. and the popularity of Skylanders kind of pushed them into coming up with this figurine aspect.
Adding that to it, yeah.
It doesn't have the same playability. In fact, you can't play like a Cars character in the Incredibles world. With it is just you play the game that was associated with that character.
Exactly.
Because Disney wanted to be able to make cool games for each of their license.
Exactly. Yeah. Because it was working. Now, so your question is, if my kid is six, what should I do? Now, naturally, you would think that Nintendo Wii is a good fit. And that might be, especially if you as your family grew up on the Nintendo Wii, and that's a game you think you can sit down and play together, and there's a lot of great value in that. The Wii U is an HD platform now. It has an interesting gamepad that looks like a giant cell phone that you get to touch the screen and such. And there's some really good games in there. But my suggestion still would be to look at the PS4 because of the longevity of the console. First of all, it's an HD platform that plays Blu-ray. So you've doubled down right there that it does more than just play video games. It gives you the ability to watch your library of Blu-ray movies if you already have one. Whereas the Xbox, the new Xbox One, is a much more complex device and will integrate in weird ways with your cable. I think if gaming is the thing that you want to do, or you notice that your child has an inclination towards gaming, I think the PlayStation or the Vita would be a really good choice. Mm-hmm. The 3DS or the Nintendo's 3D handheld model has a deeper wealth of games that are more targeted to kids. But again, if you think that your kid is going to be into games for any length of time, like this is something that you could see pushing forward, and you're not interested in buying multiple consoles over multiple years.
You're saying that you could find yourself buying a Wii U for a young child,
yep,
only to find as your child grows and develops that he's going to want a PlayStation 4 down the road.
That you can, yeah, that there are
Whereas
a lot of
titles. If
you
buy a PlayStation 4 for a younger child, there are game titles that could be played for a younger child that will also grow into titles, yep, for an older child. And then in the meantime, even if you're not a gamer, you can enjoy it as a Blu-ray player, yep, for your kid's room or
because
whatever.
And this is an older kid, but if you have a 10-year-old that's interested in, for somehow you've avoided purchasing a game console, or you're contemplating going to the next gen.
I know
gen.
What you mean because I know you, but I think it's funny that you say that, like, sounds,
I don't know if this
it
happens.
It sounds like you're saying it's abuse, like it's a form of
it
abuse.
It is. My parents didn't give me a Super Nintendo, and it cracked me. But so, yeah, if you have an older generation, like the PS3 or whatever, the Wii, and you're trying to decide, should we move on, I would suggest the PS4 because I think it would have a longer chance for more games for you to play, and then you won't have to purchase another game console later. And all these other titles we've discussed, Skylanders and Disney Infinity, are available on the PlayStation as well.
Yeah. And then the cool games, this is where you and I might even slip up in our experience. The cooler games, like, say, we've talked about it on the other show, but like the only one I could think of for like teenagers that's coming out is Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
And there might be some other launch titles or something for the PlayStation 4, or Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Would be another.
Not sure about
one.
The ratings on those for T for Team or M for Mature. I'm not sure whether.
Well, that's kind of what's going to lead me into this next thing that we've talked about it on the other show, where we've had kids. We do a podcast for video gamers, for anybody who doesn't listen to both, and we've had kids who have asked us to help them convince.
Yeah,
their
we're
parents.
On the other, we're fighting the good fight from the underside.
Right. We said, and what I say to that, we've had kids that say, "My parents won't let me play Call of Duty because they say it's too violent." Now, obviously, the listeners know that Jacob has seen the pilot episode of Walking Dead. So clearly, I don't subscribe to the violence or horror or anything like that being an influence on the kids. So I understand I'm coming at that with a certain level of bias. But we're clear what side of the fence I'm on. I told these kids that the best way for you to be able to get these games is to prove to your parents that you can handle it. Mm-hmm. You do that by not arguing with them, by complying with their wishes in exchange for this thing that they're going to do for you. And that you also have to say, listen, I really want this. What can I do to show you that I want it? Because to me, that's not you necessarily manipulating your parents. That's your parents getting what they need from you and then giving you something that you want, which to me is kind of the idea of life. That like you go in, you perform your job, you get a paycheck. You know what I mean? Whether you like it or not.
It's transactional.
Not, right. It's not in your best interest to do, in, even though it doesn't make sense to us as parents, to the kids, it's not in a kid's best interest to do exactly what their parents say for whatever fucking reason. I don't know why.
Selfishness. They're the most important person in the world. Take the scissors and the crayons.
So I can't really say about that as far as like the ratings or whatever, but I think that those are some pretty cool games that if you got, like, those seem to be the standout titles.
I think so. They're going to be great. The thing I think, just to make the delineation, a lot of these consoles, they're like networks in mm-hmm. that they have their own exclusive titles. There's a lot of things that you'll see on all three between Xbox, PlayStation, and the Wii U. But if you are like, I think Mario and Donkey Kong and Sonic are the only things that are video games, then you should go to Nintendo. Those are not cross-license. But there are a lot of things like Skylanders, like Disney Infinity, that are, hit all the consoles, and I think the PlayStation's the way to go.
So let's say I'm on a crazy tight budget.
Yeah.
Are there any games that pop out to you that might be older games? Because here's the thing. The reality is
crazy tight budget and you're trying to get a console for a kid and you have one kid, I would say you'd get a 3DS.
Oh, 3DS.
Yeah.
Because they could play that.
They could play that on their own. The games are cheaper. It's mobile and you can get a lot of mileage out of it in the car and at home and so on and so forth.
Well, if you
have two kids on a crazy tight budget, it's not a good idea because now you're doubling down and you need to buy two of them because they're not going
to
share
a console and a controller is the cheaper way to
exactly.
go. Exactly. Yeah. So what I was going to say, while I like that point, is that is there an older game that you might be able to find in a bargain bin or used or on eBay? Because I think it has to apply to the younger kids, because if you have a 10 or a 12-year-old, they're going to want Call of Duty to play.
The truth is, I think, if you're on a crazy tight budget, you want to go on what is, at the time of this recording, current gen technology, which is about to change for Black Friday, which means you want to pick up a PS3 or maybe a Wii, because they're still going to be in stores and will be in stores for the next year to year and a half, but they'll be hundreds of dollars cheaper than this new ridiculous 1080p platforms that are coming out that have mind-blowingly graphics that can revel that the moment you turn them on, you're already playing them.
Well, and what I think is very interesting, we've talked about it on the other show, is that to me, I don't feel like there's a ton of talk about launch titles for these new consoles.
It's
like
a launch window that we've got things coming up in the weeks ahead.
And so, you know, for anybody who doesn't know, if you get these next generation consoles, and by this we mean the Xbox One or the PlayStation 4, they no longer play backwards compatible games.
Yeah.
So while you could get them digitally, you could download them through the Xbox Arcade or the PlayStation Network. And I know for a fact that the PlayStation Network will allow you, if you download those games digitally, you could play PS3 games and even earlier on the PS4. Yeah. It will not read the discs for the PS3.
My spidey senses are tingling, not knowing your audience as well as I do. But what I would love to do is, if you have a question like for your specific, because I feel like I'm shooting in the dark here with a range of options, finances, number of kids, interest level in this topic. But I would love to help solve this. So if you have a question about, my kid is interested in this, which should I lean? I'm trying to figure it out. I would be happy to come back or answer emails or any of that kind of thing. So. Yeah.
You can send an email to show@thedadpodcast.com, and worst case scenario, what I will do is I will forward those over to Kevin, and then he could either respond, or I'll ask him, and then I can respond to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Best case scenario is that we could compile them and then do another episode before we get too deep into the holiday.
Yeah, to make sure you
shop it. I'm just weird about gifts, and my kids are super young, so I don't know what has to happen.
I always assume that most of your listeners had kids in the under 10 age group, but you're saying you have parents.
We run the gambit.
Got it. All the way through high school.
We run the gambit.
Such.
In fact, according to the survey, most of the kids, most of the people that have kids are actually not my kid's age. They're actually a little bit older.
Well, then you know this if you're listening to this, but it is my experience that video games are the current child generation's rock and roll, or whatever. For me, it was TV. And some video game consoles, but it was the gelling electric thing that was a water cooler cultural thing that all kids did, and that's video games. Now, I when Super Mario cartoon hit the afternoon lineup, like I remember going into school and discussing the episode that had aired the day before on the playground to this day, and that is video games across the board for kids. And so it's something that's super important to them, even if they're not into it because you don't have a game console or whatever. I guarantee it's a part of their lives because it's so prevalent in their culture.
Yeah. That makes me think of, though, that, like, say you get a PlayStation 4, it's something that I don't even know. But what I think that's interesting from the parenting perspective is the online gaming becoming so prevalent where it wasn't when we were kids, is that, as far as I could tell, there are no, like, parental controls to who your friends are on the PSN.
I believe there are parental control qualifiers that you can establish different levels of parental control within the PS4. Yeah. How that exactly plays
out. Because
I know,
as a parent, like, it's weird that I would say this, but, like, I don't mind, because I'm sitting right there with him, I think is the real reason, that I don't mind sitting right next to Jacob reminding him that what he's seeing on this Walking Dead pilot is fake.
Yeah.
And being able to gauge his reaction in the moment. What I don't like the idea of is, like, say I have a 13-year-old Jacob who's in his room playing for a couple hours some Call of Duty, and he's playing with a dude who's, you know, token a bong hit every time he makes a frag.
The difference between those two things is that the content does not change. It's just who he's experiencing it
right.
with does.
Which is their disclaimer.
Yeah.
You know, and that's...
Because your point, like, they could be watching Dexter, but they're watching it not with their dad, but instead a token 32-year-old guy in his basement. And that's the thing. The game content is going to remain the same. So it's just a matter of controlling what chat rooms and what leagues they play in these different games.
Right. And that's because I would want to, that's a thing that a problem.
You're still going
to
be killing Nazis.
Right. Which I'm fine with. My problem is that I would want to be able to have some say in that. And until you and I had this conversation right now, because it's not prevalent in my life, I wouldn't have ever thought to check about the parental controls.
You've
on
got one
friends.
Coming. So let's do a little digging to see what kind of.
Well, it should be the
controls.
Same, whatever's available on my PSN, so I can look at that.
I think there's another level. I think there is a robust level of parental controls. I vaguely remember that being mentioned, and it didn't stick in my brain because
it's not
I'm an adult and I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, you could just block those bong-toking weirdos. on the same note, and I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but if there are any dad gamers out there, I actually started a Madden 25 league that I do. I know I've plugged it on this show or at least on the Facebook page. But my gamer tag on the PlayStation Network is Justin Comedy. So feel free to add me as a friend. And if you want to play some Madden 25 in our online franchise league, please join on in. I think right now we only have me and two other players.
Yeah.
You and I are in a league for Madden 13. If you have that game, you can also add me there.
Just half of 25. If you do have a PlayStation, and especially if you are playing Skylanders Swap Force, I would love to be your friend because there are leaderboards. And you can compare collections and scores on the different levels and the number of Skylanders you have and how they've leveled up. And I have no friends. I have like 200 friends on the PlayStation.
Kevin's friends are maxed out because for anybody who doesn't know this, he's the voice of Sly Cooper, which is a very popular PlayStation platform game. And so we have another podcast that he's talked to people and given out his gamer tag there. So your friends are maxed out right now,
I believe,
right?
So, but I need to start peeling some of the dead weight off. Right. So if you want to
friend me. If it's maxed out, you can't even see a friend request?
They can't ask me. It'll automatically tell you he has too many friends.
Oh, okay.
And I get a message. So you can message me and tell me to kick somebody off if you really want to become my buddy.
And just mention the Dad Podcast.
Yeah, and I'm the Kevin Miller. I check my messages on that all the time. Yeah. So, yeah, that'd be great to get some more Skylander buddies.
I think that's it. So we covered Xbox. We didn't talk a lot about the Xbox One, maybe because we're more PlayStation folks than not.
Xbox One is cool. I skim by it. I just feel like it's a complicated device that I don't know. I feel like they're going to try to do too much, and I think they're going to have to scale back. And the world we live in does not. No one gets to be the one stop box.
Would you think it's fair to say that if you're looking at what next generation console to purchase, if you are an Xbox family, then you're already going to go with the Xbox One. But if you're on, if this is your first venture into the console world, it might not be a bad idea to let the Xbox hit. Mm-hmm. And see what the reaction is after a month before you get it for, like, say, a Christmas present or something like that. Whereas the PlayStation, I think we know more of what we're getting is that it's a new and improvement of the same. Where Xbox seems to be trying to make a shift in reinventing itself to a certain extent.
Yeah, and Sony has even indicated that Sony attempted to be the all-in-one box with the PlayStation 3 and was not successful at doing it. And the Xbox is now trying to do that by integrating cable and...
But it's interesting, later on in the life of the PlayStation 3, it actually can, because now they're able, through the way that things are going, they're able to rent movies, purchase movies.
Yeah.
All of that stuff can exist all through your PlayStation. You can watch Netflix, Hulu,
but that's not where
Amazon Prime.
That's not where their money is. Like the people that are driving the purchases of the PlayStation and purchasing the games are the hardcore gamers, not the casual gamers and not the family gamers.
What about if my kid's a PC gamer or a Mac gamer?
Oh man, if you got a sweet PC, you should be playing your PC games all the time. There's a ton of great content out there, and it's funny to get even involved in this conversation without mentioning the PC stuff, because that's where the real games are at, over on the PC games. But you do need, that's a bit of an investment because you have to buy the hardware yourself. Whereas a console, of course, you get it's all in a prepackaged bow, and they handle the software, they handle the hardware, and it's a box and you're done. Whereas your PC, you might have a Mac, it might be good enough. The game may not work with it, might need a patch, so on and so on and so forth. But the game that you should definitely consider if your kid is old enough to handle a social experience online gaming is a game called Guild Wars 2, and it's a one-time purchase, free-to-play forever, at constant new content all the time, and you get to dive into this completely imaginative world.
It seems like a just as good, lesser known, more affordable option to World of Warcraft.
It is, and mark my words, in about 5 years, Guild Wars 2 will be the game that people talk about instead of World of Warcraft.
Right, and I know that you know this because I know you, and this is your favorite game. But I think that the parents, because it might not be known by their kid, mm-hmm. I don't know the game that well, but they might get some pushback if the kid wants World of Warcraft.
Oh, yeah.
This might be a more cost-effective...
World of Warcraft is an old game. Guild Wars 2 is a new game. It looks new. It's clean. It moves very fast. It doesn't suffer from a lot of the same thinking that games did when World of Warcraft was built in 2002.
So let's say this. Say I get a Guild Wars 2 for my kid, and then my kid hates it. I still have the option to, say, sell that on an eBay or a Craigslist situation.
I don't know if you could sell it.
License.
You'd be able to return it. But I don't believe you can't sell it back on eBay.
So if they've opened it and tried it and hate it,
because you have an install code. Yeah, it's a little different than a game console.
That's why I was wondering. Because I could buy any platform other than like the DC Universe Online, I think was the first and only one so far.
But
then a game code, then the disc was just in case the disc broke.
Are your fans going to be interested in any of this stuff? Do they find this
stuff fascinating? We'll find out.
we did a Gamer Land podcast just before this where we didn't talk about video games hardly at all.
Yeah, we
should
swap
get here.
No, we only talked about this for 20 minutes or 25 minutes.
Oh, okay, good.
But I do
There's
know...
a game on the PS4 coming called Datapus, I believe it is, and it's called The Dadliest Catch. Have you seen this?
No.
You're going to have to get it when you get it. So it's a comedy game, and you use the controller to control the limbs of the character on the screen, and you have to do simple tasks like picking up car keys from a dish. But he looks like he moves and walks like a jellyfish human.
It's like, is that like double XR or whatever game about running that
Q-op? Yeah, yeah. It's like Q-op in three dimensions. So wow. you bake a cake or you cut a cake, and it's just simple, like trying to get the controller to cut the cake. It's so frustrating and hilarious to watch.
That's funny. What I was going to say is that I know we have crossover listeners that listen to Gamerland and this that are dads. But I think that they're probably going, oh yeah, here, yes, yes, they already know. But then anybody else might be listeners that maybe they're not into games, and they're like, oh, I don't, you know, and maybe you can help them kind of go, if you get this, I think you'll get a win.
Win-win,
and we can kind of help bring those worlds together.
Bring them in.
Make a bridge between them and their children as far as video games are concerned.
Because that's really it, is that games really do speak to kids. And I believe it's not just because they're cool and trendy and some new piece of technology. Obviously, I've been playing them since I was a kid. I believe it's because it's an interactive medium where the audience puts themselves in the position of the hero or the villain or whatever. But instead of any other medium that exists right now, you do not play a passive role. You play an active role that the creator of the game is responsible for guiding you through. Whereas opposed to like something like Dungeons and Dragons, where you're relied on your own imagination and a series of weirdly written number rules, video games are encouraged to allow you to experience a story within safe boundaries at your own pace. And it's incredibly engaging and extremely imaginative, and it brings out problem solving for kids. It teaches them now social ability and learning to persevere through challenges, because if something's difficult, you're forced to repeat it until you're able to figure out a solution that works. Hand-eye coordination. There's a lot of great things that come out of games.
Whenever we bring that kind of stuff up in this context, I think it seems like a desperate attempt to kind of go, just get some video games for your kids. I don't know. That's always what I think, like on the game podcast, of like, where I think it's obvious, but it's easy when you're two guys who like to play games.
I would love to hear from your audience.
Yeah, exactly. Let us know. Comments games on the Facebook page. Send an email. show@thedadpodcast.com. Facebook.com/dadpodcast. I'd love to get some more likes up there, regardless if you're a Facebook person. Throw a comment up there and go, yeah, hey, that helped. Or yeah, I play games with my kids, and whatever your opinions are. Before I forget, as we wrap this up.
Don't you have to do your moment of the week and stuff?
Yeah, we could do moments of the week. Oh, okay. I didn't want to throw that at you as well. And I mean, like I said, we
I'm here to experience the dad podcast.
You want the full thing. All right. You made them. Coming at you.
You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the week, brought to you by Stitcher, the free app that handles all your podcasting needs without having to sync to your computer. Stream all your favorite podcasts right to your Droid, BlackBerry, or iPhone. Just go to thedadpodcast.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the left-hand side. It's free, people, and they give us money if you do it.
So my moment of the week is my wife and I, as many people who listen to the podcast episodes with Mr. Dooley, my neighbor, or Paco Lancini, as he's known to the internet, that my wife and I have had like a couple fights. Everything obviously is awesome. And one of the things that has come out of us coming out of these kind of fights is that I realized that what she's very good is bringing me into the moment with the kids. And so we had this great moment where the kids were kind of, we got done with dinner early, and it was a long time before bedtime, but because of the time change and whatever noise that just whatever fucking was, anyway, that we could, I don't understand computers. I'm an old man. It was dark outside, but it's like, oh, but we still have an hour before they're supposed to go to bed. So they wanted to go outside, and we have a rope from a tree that my dad got, and they wanted to swing on the rope. So we came out and sat in the dark, and I turned on whatever lights we had and just laughed and joked around. And it was just it's one of those things that I think is nice for obvious reasons to kind of get jerked out of whatever routine you have and change things up a little bit. And just, it's one of those few moments that I think we get that to me are the the definition of moment of the week, where it's like, oh, this is why I'm doing this. Is that this cuteness of watching them swing and then, you know, reminding them to share. And then, you know, we got them inside and there wasn't a lot of fits that happened where the fun wasn't ruined immediately following the good times. And then that led right into me and the wife cuddling and watching Amazing Race. Like, it was just, it was a nice moment that to go, oh, okay, this is why we have a family.
That's great.
It left you with that fulfilling thing. All right, your turn.
Do you have that long intro so you can remember something?
No.
Is that part of the...
I made it a long time ago just because, and it's only that long because that is the loop that was pre-made through GarageBand.
I see.
That is the answer to your question.
My moment of week, so Quinn is 1 year old, and since he was about, I don't know, 8 or 9 months old, he is able to make the face.
Yes.
Have I mentioned that on the to your
no,
listeners?
Not to this show.
Great.
So I know it because when you went trick-or-treating with us, that was the parlor trick that
it's the best.
Did. It was great.
So when he was real little, he would make this like struggling against his car seat face that we first thought he was having a stroke, and he would just silently clench all of his muscles and strain with in kind of doing like a strongest man of the world bicep thing.
Yeah, like he was Superman breaking free of chains.
Yeah, but he couldn't. But his eyes are super wide, and he's doing this like Hulk grimace, like that, but no sound.
No noise, yeah.
Just, and so the first time it happened, we kind of wigged out and then realized that he was just kind of complaining about the car seat. And then one day, he made the face randomly on his own, hanging out with my wife, and she said, "Oh, she made it back to him," and it became this conversation of them making this face back and forth. And so we were able to cultivate it with him and get him to do the face almost on command, almost every time, unless he's learning how to walk. Then most of his RAM got operated in that, and so. This last week we were in Staples picking something up, and he's being a cute little kid wandering through, and then there's this we go to check out, and this girl with her boyfriend that had seen him earlier got into line behind us, and he's doing the super cute baby thing, and she's a little blonde girl about 18 or so he's in love with her because he loves blonde girls, and so he's doing his little hand fist wave and smiling and being the cute little Gerber baby that he is. Just so we're clear, we have random strangers say, I never tell this to anybody, but your baby is really, really cute. And maybe you've experienced that as well, but it's a bit of a shocker.
That makes me feel bad for the people who have never heard that.
Okay, it happens to us a lot. So I want you to be aware.
He's a good-looking kid.
We have a very good-looking kid. Like, that's not like parents love. He's better looking than we could have than we prayed for.
It is my hope, though, that everybody is drawn to the cuteness of a baby.
Absolutely.
So everybody likes to joke that not all babies are cute. Some of them are ugly, but I find
I didn't say that to create dissension. I just meant to say we're...
Well, then knock it the fuck off. No.
He's a bit of a celebrity. Like, Kat has had to realize that she has to, like, if people pay attention, she has to stop what she's doing. Oh, he's so cute. He's so cute. He's so cute. Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to go back to buying
cheese.
That
you have an obligation. I like that.
Because otherwise it gets weird.
Yeah.
So anyway, so he's doing the little baby-fisted little squeezy hand thing. And she's like, oh, he's saying hi. And I go, give her the face. without missing a beat, he just looks at her. Ah! And does the face. Oh! She's amazing. I don't even look at the girl. I just push him out into the cart, into the parking lot. I give him a little high five. I'm like, that's why you're pretty freaking awesome. He knows how to turn it on, and he's like, got it. The face? Yeah. And it's so funny because he knows it's funny, too. So when it's over, he's always like, ah.
He laughs.
That was funny.
I have a catchphrase.
Did the face.
I have two things at 1 year old, a social security number and a catchphrase already.
That's set for life.
That's what I
used to pay taxes and die.
Do you think when he dies he's going to be making the face?
I said we need to put that on your epitaph. It just says the face or a sketch of you doing it. One of the two.
That also makes me realize one of the few things we do not have a say in usually. Like, you know, if things work
out according
to him, we're going to make it dark before things end, Justin. Anyway. Yeah.
Happy holidays! What's on your epitaph?
All right. Well, again, send us an email. Let us know. Comment on Facebook.com/DadPodcast. Follow the show on the Twitter @DadPodcast. All of that stuff. Oh, before I forget, I recently got caught up on some awesome Naptime Radio episodes, so I want to give a shout-out to my good friends over at naptimeradio.com. They're also available on Stitcher, so if you're listening to this show on Stitcher, more than likely it's one of those shows that's suggested on there because we have a lot of crossover listeners.
And you talk about it a lot.
I love these ladies. They're absolutely fantastic. They're coming up on their 100th episode, so I'm excited for that. But they did a really cool thing. They talked about reading in their power naps and then went through, like, developmentally each of the phases that kids go through with reading and also how their personalities can affect. And what I really like about what they do with the power naps is that it's never with an agenda. It's always like, here's the information. Do with it what you will.
That's like little
parenting cliff notes. It's a very smart idea that I may or may not have wished I came up with first. But
does not mean you cannot steal.
No, I can't steal it. I love these guys too much. I would much rather people listen to them do it because they're better at it. But anyway, also, the other thing that they did, which I thought was interesting, is that Kate was tired of doing not tired of, that's not fair to say, but she was like, I don't really have anything I want to do for a power nap, but she needed to be inspired. So she found a bunch of quotes from famous people about parenting, like Albert Edison and Eleanor Roosevelt and Walt Disney. And it was great because I was listening to it in the car and the things that they were saying, I found myself verbally going, oh, wow, yeah, that was – I'm glad I got to hear that.
So yeah.
Definitely check out Naptime Radio at naptimeradio.com. Again, on iTunes, Stitcher, all of that stuff. Everywhere you need them, they are available. And I think that is it, except for, of course, it wouldn't be a show if I didn't bring up you guys going to thedadpodcast.com, become a paid subscriber, $2 a month or $24 a year. I just added, now I'm up to 32 people that are doing that. So in the last week, I added one more. So thank you. They already heard their name. That's why I'm not going to say it now. And I honestly can't. Well, I can look at it, asshole, Justin. Why are you?
You're such a terrible person.
I'm a terrible producer.
Terrible
Carl.
At being terrible.
Carl, you beautiful son of a bitch. Damn it, I love you. So anyway, I think that's good.
Is that so they can make that their outgoing message?
Listen, if you're a paid subscriber and you want an outgoing message, I will fucking do that for you. That's how committed I am to this. But again, I appreciate it very, very much. All you guys got to do is go to thedadpodcast.com, blah, blah. You already said it. Shut up, Justin. On behalf of my new friend, Kevin Miller, this is Justin Worship saying, stay frosty.